Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
My name's Chad.
This is Johan.
This is John.
This week, Dan has been claimed by the flu.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's actually going around.
Like the icky, gross flu.
Yeah, it's stomach flu. My entire family had it over the weekend.
Yeah,
we're on the last stages of it. Myself,
Your whole clan was laid low by it.
Yeah, it was completely. So yeah, it's a pretty nasty bug that's going around. So
I wish Dan well.
Hopefully, he'll get over it soon, and it won't spread through his entire family
or us.
Yeah, yeah.
I had this 2 months ago. I hope I'm immune now.
I had it 2 months ago too.
Oh,
luckily for my sake, it was. Mm-hmm. I had a fairly light reaction to it, so I either got lucky or I have round two coming. I hope that's not the case. So.
I had a good round of what I thought was food poisoning last week, but maybe it was this, and I just was extremely resilient.
It probably was, because it's whenever this kind of thing happens, you know, especially with the kids, you start talking to, you know, whatever, the doctors, the nurses, whatever like that, and they'll tell you, yeah, it's going around, this is what's going on. So apparently it's out there, and it's been going around for the last several weeks in St. Louis.
Dan was suggesting that, you know, maybe we not come because he doesn't want to infect us and we don't want to get sick. And I'm just sitting there like, I've got a 4-year-old in preschool. Yeah, yeah. I've got friends who have kids in preschool. I work with people who have kids who are in preschool. And it's just like, I have so many disease vectors coming at me.
Children are germ magnets.
They are.
Any germ within 50 miles will immediately stick to every child.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Typically speaking, like you said, when you've got kids, you're going to be sick. You've got all these things. You're going to have them anyway. It's really your friends that don't have kids that are in the most danger.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
You're doomed.
I don't get sick from kids. I get sick from my reckless party lifestyle of Dungeons & Dragons and Dresden Files.
Whoa.
Well, we got a couple announcements before we get rolling on to more exciting things. Fear the Con reminder. It's not just around the corner. It used to be just around the corner, but this year it's a little later. But
we'd be halfway there by now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Usual time.
Yeah, we'd be in.
I mean, like in the car, physically halfway there.
Yeah.
Call for GMs.
Yes.
We need you guys to come out of the woodwork and get out there and sign up, put your games out there. I know that Chris actually sent me a text earlier today saying there was one slot left open in one of his games, and he was taunting me to join, and I didn't. So, you know, what do you
think? I think Saturday is looking a bit light. We need
especially early Saturday. Yeah. Slots 4 and 5 are pretty slim.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't like Jenga.
If you are thinking about running a game at Fear the Con, please do so, and if you are willing to do that for us, and we eternally thank you for it, look at what is scheduled and try to fill in some of the empty slots. There's a little bit of imbalance going on right now, and we need to kind of balance it out with more games.
Absolutely. So get out there and sign up. The other thing I wanted to mention, we need to mention, is that we have a flyer. We've mentioned this before. If you are interested in getting a flyer and maybe printing up some flyers and putting it in your area, we will have a link to that as well. I know that we've put out flyers in the St. Louis area already.
And if you live in Nome, Alaska, and want to put out flyers to a St. Louis 2-day con, go for it.
There are people coming from farther than Nome, Alaska.
There certainly are.
This is true. So, yes, we'll put a link to the flyer in the show notes so that can be, you guys can grab that and do with it what you will. Anyway, moving on.
It's a very crinkly flyer. I wouldn't use it for anything other than informing people about Fear the Con 5.
That's true. And that's the only thing that it's approved for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, FTB compliant.
The open flyer license specifically prohibits any contact with bodily fluid of any kind. Solid or liquid.
It's good to know.
And if it is used for those things, there's definitely a non-attribution portion to this. It's like, we don't want to be informed. We don't want to be associated with that.
Please consult your physician before taking internally.
Armageddon.
Okay.
Very well, then.
All right.
Nobody heard that one about the hamster. Oh, whatever.
What?
Someone in listener land is laughing at the shotgun felching bit from the radio. But anyway, now Pat's giggling.
Well, he just thinks shotgun felching's hilarious.
Yeah, that's right. That's enough to set me off. The other announcement that we have is donations for Danger Brewery.
Yes.
There is, we'll also provide a link for this. It's a
nano brewery. It's some Fear the Boot fans out of Indy. Really awesome guys. And they have been doing a couple of room parties at Fear the Con where they brew their own beer and they bring it out and they serve it up. And these guys are like super into beer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are people out there who like know every single little aspect of rules of like D&D or some role playing game, or know every piece of minutia about a TV show or a comic book. These guys know beer. They have an encyclopedic knowledge of beer and beer making. And we kind of hit them up. We're getting a new venue for Fear the Con this year. And we can bring our own beer. They don't care what beer we bring. Unlike the last place where we had to kind of use their beer.
Mm-hmm.
So we floated the idea of, hey, you guys supply this room party with beer. What do you think about bringing your beer to the con? And we will have fine, delicious craft beer for Fear of the Con. They are taking donations. There are people have told us in the past that they can't come out to Fear of the Con. But they want to help out with the con in some way. They want to be a part of it in some way. And this is an excellent way for you to be a part of the con, is to donate to Danger Brewery and help them make beer, good quality craft beer, at Fear the Con for all the gamers. And we're going to have a link for that in the show notes. They're not going through Kickstarter or anything like that, because I don't think Kickstarter lets people do donations to brew beer, but which is all the shame for Kickstarter, in my opinion. They have a PayPal account, and you can donate directly to them. And
awesome.
We're going to have a link. They have a thing set up where you can do it through Facebook, or you can do a direct link to their email address, and we'll have all of that information in the show notes. Pat doesn't like beer, but I think they are making a rather delicious cider they're bringing.
I'm very excited about this. Yeah, the plans are that they will have a cider, and I cannot wait. They had some last year, and I heard very good things about it.
Unfortunately, it was very good.
I did not have any yummy of it, but I'm excited because I'm a hard cider fan.
I hit that crap up like the Thursday night before gaming started, and I think by the time of gaming proper, we had all drank it all.
Yeah.
So
I heard it went quickly.
That is how good it was. And how drunk the population generally is at Fear the Con after about 2 p.m. Yay, Fear the Con!
So our banter topic for this week, role-playing origin stories. I had to put the stories on there for Wayne.
Yes.
You know, he's not here, but he's here in spirit. Somebody
one day
will do
I saw a magical lute and I played it
say,
and I was a bard.
Somebody
That's
will
Wayne's
have to do
story.
Something awkward.
Yeah.
And I vote John.
No, I just figured out that was Wayne's story.
Basically, we're talking about how we got into role-playing games. And I think I've told my story like a billion times, but everybody here is kind of new-ish or maybe have not told their story. John is not new.
I'm brand new. No, I only joined this show in episode 2.
Actually, I'm going to kick this one right over to our newest person.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, Johan, I would like to hear your story first.
Well, fair enough. Honestly, is not a hugely exciting story. I actually picked it up from my family. My father and my brothers, and at one point, at least my sister as well, used to play D&D first edition, AD&D, the only true edition, until third.
By this point, you're never going to guess which edition I started gaming
in. He just kicked off the 15-page thread.
I do what I can.
By hour 5.
Which edition is the one where it has the guys on horseback going through the canyon and he's got a sword?
That's
up.
Second
That's
edition.
That's second
that
edition.
That is the first print of the second edition.
First print. Yeah. That is where I started with, not gaming, but that's where my first
That
candy.
Was mine as well. That
and
was my first.
And it was
first.
Very blue, if I remember correctly.
It was
correctly.
Very blue on the inside.
Yes.
I started with the second edition of second edition, which was full color on the inside.
Yes, I started with the first printing of first edition AD&D, which the player's handbook had a giant orange statue of some demonic looking figure with a thief crawling up, prying the movies out of the eyes.
Awesome.
And the DMG had I think it was supposed to be a fire giant, but it looked straight demonic, whatever it was.
I thought it was holding a Batazu or whatever the people demons.
It might have been it might have been.
I think it was. I think it was.
They were still called Balrogs in first edition because they hadn't heard of lawsuits.
They hadn't heard of Christopher Tolkien. You shall not pass.
But yes, I started playing first edition AD&D when I was 4.
Wow.
The first time I can actually remember a campaign was shortly after I turned 5, which I only know how old I was because we had just moved. And I remember us just moving into the new house. And I remember that campaign had gone on before that. So I'm pretty sure it was 4 when I started. First character was naturally a halfling thief named Bilbo, I believe, because that's how creative I am.
That's like a dwarf named
Thorin.
Wayne.
No, he changed it. It's Thorbin.
It's like open now or something.
Like, oh my God, Wayne, really? Really?
He claims he didn't know.
Orinthe.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
Damn it, Wayne.
So, yeah, that was it. The second character I had was first level mage in AD&D first edition in a group of 5th to 7th level characters. It worked out real well.
That sounds about 4 hit points of fun.
It was. Yeah, wow. Welcome to the game. Oh, look, you're dead. So, yeah, hardcore first edition AD&D. That's my entrance.
It's interesting because one of the things that we've sort of talked about on and off is sort of this, the passing on the mantle of role playing, because this is something that I know Chad and I certainly are on the cusp of with our children being of that age. Actually,
you have a 5-year-old boy.
I was like, I have a 5-year-old, four and 5-year-old are what we have. And that's where you started. But I think it's really cool to see that your origin was with your family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's awesome. Your mom and dad,
with
your
my children
playing with it. Yeah.
As early as, I think 4 is about when we started with the 2 youngest at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we don't do it often and we don't do anything quite as heavy as hardcore first edition AD&D. But, you know, we have a Christmas tradition now where we play the Secret Lives of Gingerbread Men every Christmas.
Oh, cool.
You mean you don't play Vampire the Werewolf Murder Rapescapade with your 4-year-old?
That's Halloween.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, fair enough. Not Christmas. Not Christmas.
See, that's my birthday. So
I'm
going to
play Rapescapade.
Rapescapade.
You know, we...
it's about abduction, damn it.
We have a lot of board games and such we play as families, and I picked up a game a while back, and one of the things I look for in a game is that it'll support 5 players, because I have a family size of 5. Found one, brought it home, broke it out. I hadn't really been paying too much attention to it, but it was actually a World of Darkness Hunter game.
Wow.
In card game / board game format. You know, we did not break it out straight in front of the kids, luckily enough, because I'm flipping through these cards and there's like meth lab, whorehouse. Oh my God. I don't think we're playing this on Family
like
Game Night.
Jefferson City, The Gathering.
I was going to say, this is a typical day for John at work.
Sexton.
Yeah. Wow.
It was a little bit of a shock there, but now we haven't broken that one out for the kids yet. Munchkin is bad enough with the knee pads of a lure. Luckily, none of my children have asked.
They don't know about
the knee pads
of
allure. They just know it's just an awesome card.
Yeah. Jokes like that are going to sail over their heads for quite a while to come.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. It means that you can watch movies that are like right on the edge and then they just don't get it.
Yeah.
In fact, I watch a lot of movies and my son will walk down and he's just like, turn this off. This is boring. They're just talking. And
there's that time period where, like, if it's not animated, it's crap.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were at that time period, there was no such thing as CGI, or if there was, it was very, very rudimentary.
Yeah.
Do you guys as kids look down on hand animated stuff and only watch computer stuff?
My son watches the original early 80s Super Mario Brothers cartoon.
Well, that's just a good cartoon.
Like, well, yeah. I mean, it's
but
not
I think
really,
it was late 80s.
It's hand animated.
And live action with Captain Lou Albano.
I know, yep.
And 80 celebrities that you don't remember.
About a year ago, because it was just after the last Fear the Con, because Mikey's cartoon song, Saturday morning cartoon song, got me thinking about the old cartoons, and I pulled up Thundercats.
There you go.
And my son watched the entire series of Thundercats.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, no, he definitely likes hand animation just fine.
Yeah, well, I don't think they get into a snobbery at this age, really.
Kids like crap. Like,
well, yeah, no, I didn't mean they really actually had terrible. Established tastes that meant anything. I just meant, like, in the same way that you and I, when we were 4 years old, we'd be transfixed by animated anything, but it would be put off by live action anything. Do they have that same kind of mental classification? And
I have
it. Sounds to me like they don't.
Only
they
to the degree that if the CGI is too good, they don't like it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I would say that my youngest, at least, like, didn't care for Avatar. Mm. Yeah, tons of CGI, tons of special effects,
they can't
but it's just
irreal.
You know, it doesn't look like a cartoon anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's a bunch of people
it
talking.
It has to be, it's got to be the bright, the flashy, the vibrant, distinct colors. That's really what sets the cartoons apart.
Explosion.
And that's why if you look at, like, kids' TV shows that aren't cartoons, they still look like cartoons because they have those bright colors that really
everyone's
pop out
dressed
of the screen.
Super bright
you got the super bright clothes. You got the purple dinosaur with the bright green spots.
Yeah.
You know, everything looks like a cartoon. So
Everything looks like the world as I see it at last call.
So, John, how did you get started in role-playing?
I got
not
started
that kind of role-playing.
With a visit to an old comics and games shop, the Fantasy Shop, which in St. Louis 15 years ago used to be everywhere and have everything. Now it's kind of contracted along with the brick and mortar gaming industry insofar as that still exists. I was at the Fantasy Shop in Kirkwood for some reason. I think I was looking for like Star Wars toys or maybe a Spider-Man comic book. And I just sauntered over to the gaming session. And this was at the height of the mid 90s second edition resurgence. I think the republication of second edition with the new artwork and layout had just happened. All of the complete class and race books were on displays. There were multiple box campaign settings. We would later find out there were way too many box campaign settings coming out for the market to sustain. But this was right at that point where the 90s heyday of RP was going. White Wolf was right in the wheelhouse. I wasn't into that because I was, you know, 12. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the market was rising. And I just picked up the second edition Redbox. One of the nerds there was like, hey, check this out. I don't know if I talked to him about, you know, yeah, I've played Final Fantasy and Dragon Warrior and whatever. And this would have been the late 16-bit or early 32, 64-bit era of video games. I knew what RPGs were as they translated to electronic games, but I didn't know what tabletop was.
And I would just like to point out how unbelievably jealous I am of anybody who was introduced to RPGs whilst living in a city.
Yes.
Because I grew up in nowhere land.
Yeah.
For those of you familiar with Missouri, I grew up in very central Missouri, not even particularly close to Jefferson City or Columbia being the biggest towns there.
You didn't grow up in a Missouri town. You grew up in Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah. The nearest town was 10 miles away, population 50. And the only contact I had with games outside our bookshelf was Dragon Magazine, flipping through and staring woefully at the list of gaming stores in places that I'm not.
So when I meet listeners at Wing Nights and Fear the Cons who say, I listen to Fear the Boot to get my gaming thrill because I live in butthole Massachusetts and there's no one to game with, that was you.
Only they have the internet.
Yeah, only now yeah. There's remote gaming and stuff like this.
There's remote gaming. You can go out to Amazon and you can buy gaming books.
Yeah.
There was literally no way to do that me, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was almost in high school that, I take that back. When I was in elementary school, Walden Books started selling D&D for like 3 weeks. And
really, we had Walden Books. Yeah, it had a small section. I remember there was like an end cap that had, you know, the role-playing stuff on it.
I almost got the impression that they did one order of D&D stuff, and then it just sat there for 2 years until they sold out.
Probably because I'm sure it was overpriced is the reason. Because that was back in a time, God, this is dating. I don't ever go to a bookstore anymore because you buy it on Amazon or you buy it online or whatever. But back in that day, you know, like going on the weekends, I get to go to the mall. And going to the mall, there's a number of stores that I would hit. Spencer's was the number one. Second would be like the bookstores, like Walden Books is what we had. And so I'd go in and spend a lot of time there. And, you know, you go back there and they had a huge like fantasy book section with all the horrible, cheesy, you know, sci-fi and fantasy books there. But then they had the little section of like Dungeons and Dragons books and stuff like that. But it was, yeah, it was very small.
I would always scout out like the B. Daltons and the Walden Books. Yeah. And I caught a fire sale at KB Toys one time. I don't know, Chad, I think you were in and out of working there at about the time I was getting into gaming years and years and years ago. But I walked in there and they had a bunch of like Dark Sun and Al Kadim stuff that they had marked down to $2 a pop. And I just snatched all that crap up. Never used it, but
I remember going to hobby shops that specialized in model trains and RC cars and then like little balsa wood woodworking kits and sewing kits. They sold yarn. I mean, there was a generalist hobby shop
used to have it.
And they sold role-playing games. And that's where I got a lot of old out-of-print role-playing game books is by going there. And it was, like you said, they ordered it 10 years ago and it's just sat there collecting dust. The price tag on it is 1980s prices marked down so they can get rid of it. And then I would walk in and I'm like, oh my God, I could sell this on eBay for like $150 and it's $2. Sold. I'll take all of them. You need all of them? I have three of identical copy rulebook. Yes. Do you have any more in back?
Yeah, the closest I ever came to that was in junior high. Finally, an FLGS opened near me. So I, of course, hung out there constantly. And the man, bless his soul, had to be one of the worst businessmen I have ever come across who usually, running a business.
Usually the guys who run this are.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel bad for him because to give you an example of this man's business acumen, I came in at one point and he was showing off this new thing that had shown up, which was this card game called Magic.
Same experience.
He said, "Oh yeah, look, neat. Isn't it fun?" And everyone said, "Nah, that's pretty stupid." And so this box of Magic cards, or actually several boxes, because he had ordered an entire case of these Magic cards, sat there for like 3 months. Nobody bought one. Finally, somebody came in and said, "Hey, that looks like a neat game. Why don't you sell me all of the stuff? All of what you got." And he's like, "Well, yeah, fine. No one's buying it. $50. It was an entire set of Alpha.
Yeah, it was a case of Alpha.
It was a case of Alpha right before Revised came out.
Oh.
Instantly would have been worth about $2,000 a month later.
God.
Easily. Wow. And,
more.
So the closest I came to that was I bought out his entire World of Darkness selection right before Vampire started becoming popular in the area. And so, yeah, I cleared him out of every White Wolf book and product he had for like $20 because he wanted them off the shelf. And then 3 weeks later, people found out that they could be vampires. And if there's one thing that people in Jeff City love, it's, you know, sucking on the souls of those around them.
Indeed.
So Vampire just took off in that town. And he had to order it all back in. And
I think the last game store in Columbia just closed a couple months ago. So as far as I know.
No, it's still there.
Valhalla's?
Mm-hmm. They moved.
Oh, they moved.
Yeah, they're over by the mall now.
Okay, never mind. Huh. I drove past that like 2 weeks ago and I thought, wait a minute. I moved out of Columbia 6 months ago and that place was banging. And they've still managed to go out of business. Wow, brick and mortar is dead. But okay, they've moved.
Yeah, they moved. I don't know about how banging they are, but there's hardly ever customers in there that seem to be paying for anything when I enter.
Well, yeah, they do play a lot, but
they're just playing War Machines.
Yeah, I was very briefly involved with the local Magic community in Columbia through law school, and whenever there was an excuse, whenever there was a pre-release or a new set or something, I saw those people do $230 Magic card transactions a minute for the 2 hours leading up to a tournament or an event. So I know they kept the lights on.
CCGs are a license to print money.
Sure.
So
that's true.
Well, yeah. On the other hand, I don't know how much they had to pay WotC to collect that money. Probably a lot.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, back to the subject.
We had a subject?
At some point in there, and you know, people are
gaming V-card
people are
stories.
Screaming into their headphones and at their iPods and their various MP3 playing devices. Yelling at me, cursing my name because I've let things stray this long. You and your damn tangents. Damn you.
I like tangents.
I know, right? I do too. I'm totally into
they
geometry.
They throw
so
people
it's
off
awesome.
In the quest to determine whether we're scripted or not.
That's exactly right. And you know what? It gives that one guy something to do. He's transcribing away. He's like, transcribe this. There you go. Okay, anyway. So my intro into role-playing was for me, it was typical. I don't know if it's typical for many people, but I was a freshman in high school, and I know I've said this before on mic, so this is, you know, people can just turn off now. I was reading the Dragonlance series. It was, I believe it was in gym, where we were like
sitting around reading the series before you even start playing role-playing games?
Yes, I was.
And you weren't reading it like, wow, I really need to get in this role-playing game. You're like, wow, that's
no,
cool
exactly.
Cover,
yeah, for me, it was like, a friend of mine was reading the Dragonlance books. He said, Pat, you've got to read these. They're awesome. And so I'm like, okay, fine. I mean, I resist at first, and finally, I'm like, I started reading them. So
I know a lot of guys who got into gaming by reading Dragonlance.
Yeah, and I was one of them. So I started. I was reading these books, and so my friend and I were both reading these books. We typically had, you know, several classes together with our other friend, and so he saw us reading these books. Essentially, it was very shady. It's like, you know, it's the typical, you know, the role player shame kind of thing. It's like real shady deal. Like eventually one of these days he sort of saddles him and says, so, I see you reading those, fantasy books there.
How slimy.
Yeah. You want to try something really cool. Why don't you come over to my basement and let me show you something.
Guy seems legit.
And we're like, you know, legit. Like, okay. And so we did. You know, literally, it was one of those things where he says, you know, hey, have you ever role played before? And we're like, what? What role, huh?
Here, put on this French maid outfit.
Exactly. That's what John was talking about the other night. And I'm like, no, but I'm really hoping to because this one girl is really cute in third period. But anyway, so now he's, you know, he said, he sort of introduces to us like, hey, I see you're reading the Dragonlance books. Have you ever role played before? And we're like, nope, don't even know what you're talking about. Actually, we did because at that point it was like, oh, yeah, that's Dungeons and Dragons. That's where you worship demons and sacrifice, you know, babies on an altar, right?
Springfield, he's like, Missouri.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Buckle of the Bible Belt.
Come on over Saturday and bring some goat's blood. So that's what exactly what we did.
You had goat's blood.
I did. I lived on a farm. I had goat's blood. I even had ram's horns. I brought them, and, it, you know, the rest is history.
And so, now I have a bloodborne parasite.
So, you know, basically he said, well, hey, you know, let's, you know, role playing, sort of outline what it was. And then we literally started playing second edition D&D, but we actually played through Dragonlance. Yeah. And we played the characters. Again, it's what we were used to. It's what we knew. It was our gateway into it. So we started playing those characters and playing in Dragonlance because that's what we were reading at the time. We were totally into. And so really,
did you have the module?
I don't know. Our friend PW is the one who DM'd us, and I think we had our own story going. I mean, we weren't playing the Dragonlance story. It was, we were playing the characters.
A magical bracelet.
That's how original we were. We were playing most of the characters.
And throw it in a giant crater filled with acid.
Exactly, yeah. So we were playing sort of our own stories, but we were using those characters because, you know, that's how original we were.
I had the opposite originality problem. I didn't know about like continuity or what these campaign settings were, even though I had seen them. So I just sort of got done with the three modules that came with the red box. And from there it was, okay, there's another haunted house and another cave with another dragon. Go kill it. And it worked.
Well, you know, D&D that's the
thing. A dungeon crawling.
People will deride you for this kind of thing, but really all that matters is if it's fun for you guys, that's what it's about.
No, yeah, you're doing it wrong.
Continuity and story and a flowing plot DM is awesome.
And you're able to get to the end of a 4-hour gaming session without soiling yourself, you feel like hot crap.
Yeah.
And I did.
I wrote my my first dungeon module when I was 10, printed it out on my dot matrix printer, had the graph paper all penciled in with all the math. I stole graph paper
from sixth grade science class, hand over fist.
I had an almost unending supply from all of the D&D supplies that were laying around because, for the most part, my brothers quit playing. And so
if only
I had a huge box of D&D supplies.
My parents thought it was awesome because it made me social. I was never antisocial, but I was Nintendo or reading a book is just as good, if not better, 9 times out of 10 than seeing friends. And with D&D, it was like, holy crap, he wants to have 6 people over. Bring out the pizza and the orange soda. It's cool. So, awesome. I mean, I never had to fight against the
D&D is for demons. And even when he was 18 and all of his friends were 5 to 10 years older than him, his mom still brought out the pizzas and orange sodas and she did lasagna.
Even when I started working at a grocery store and I was in my teens and all the gamers I knew there were in their mid and late 20s.
Oh,
it was like,
gaming mom.
Mom,
great.
I'm going over to Chad's. I'm going to stay all night. There's probably going to be beer there, but I'm not going to drive and no one's getting pregnant. And she was like, great.
Yeah.
Kill some monsters for me. No one's getting pregnant
because you're over with your role-playing buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the irony was, though, some of the most female-heavy groups I've ever been in were in that period.
Really?
I mean, it was 1-to-1
that's awesome for you
guys. 3-to-2. Yep. There were more in college. In college, I think my group, junior and senior year, had me, one other guy player, and like 4 woman players.
That is awesome.
But, yeah.
We actually had in our group, in my Springfield group growing up, well, later on in the group, we had 2 females that played in there, 2 or 3 females, which actually is fairly unusual, I think. So that's you know.
I think it's another generational thing.
Yeah.
I think it goes with the gamer shit.
And these were younger. Of our group, it was a high school group, and sort of the core of us, the 3 of us that sort of started were the oldest, and then the others were 2 to 4 years younger than the rest of us. So these girls were 2 or 3 years younger than we were. So yeah, maybe I think it is
even,
sort of a
even that is
thing.
Pretty enterprising though, because even that kind of age difference is substantially older than I am.
Yeah.
So I think the difference is, and I've said this before, is where were you in life when the Fellowship of the Ring film came out? Because overnight, the gamer shame thing took a big hit, and it was suddenly chic to be geek.
I was say, cause,
and
yeah,
I was in my freshman talking, year of high school, so I was right there.
I'm talking 1992 was when I was a freshman in high school. Yeah, so that's that's
2000.
What, that's 8 years.
Yeah.
That's 8 years previous to
94,
the film.
Missouri, at least up in St. Louis. I don't know about the countrified Missouri, but yeah, it was not chic to be geek. I mean, it was about the sports and the cars, and the sports guys beat up the nerds, and it was really kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, we had the same thing down in Springfield. It was
so bad. I mean, let me lay this on you as a completely foreign concept nowadays. You, at least in my school, and at least in my town, in my area, this sort of St. Louis region, you did not tell people you played video games. We talk about, oh, know your roots, Nintendo, Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda. Yeah, I wear a Legend of Zelda t-shirt. And I have a Triforce tattoo, and it's like my girlfriend's hot. She's got a Triforce tattoo. It's awesome. You didn't tell people you had a Nintendo, and you didn't tell people that you played video games because it was too nerdy and you were a social outcast and you got beat up over it. It was ridiculous. Yeah, absolutely ludicrous.
My experience with it was that the Nintendo is what changed that in at least my area. Pre-Nintendo, video games were a very nerdy thing to do. Mm-hmm. A year after Nintendo came out, everyone had one.
Yeah. That was kind of the way it was for us, too, because I did not have a gaming system before Nintendo, but I did get a Nintendo. And at about that time, it's like everybody was having it. Like all the kids that I went to school with, they had Nintendo and whatever else. So, yeah, but I hear where you're coming from. You know, and for me, it was
totally outside of St. Louis or even outside of my suburb county where I lived, it could be totally different, but that's how it was where I lived. And it really sucked.
I was born like 2 weeks after the American release of the NES, I think. I do not remember a time in which video game playing was acceptable and completely pervasive, or rather wasn't.
My aunt worked at an automotive plant, and she brought me home one of the stickers they stick on the side of the car. It wasn't a sticker, it was metal. Plastic metal thing says turbo electronic fuel injection. I stuck that on the front of my Nintendo.
Awesome.
Nice. On the lid is.
And then you played Excitebike with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And RC Pro-Am.
Dude, I was an RC Pro-Am master.
And Spy Hunter.
You know how you get those little... Yes. I love
Spy Hunter. I bet they didn't license the Peter Gunn theme for that game. I bet they just put it in and said, screw it. It's the Wild West.
You know how in RC Pro-Am, when you complete a course, you get a trophy?
Yes.
And the trophies don't go away.
I get all the trophies.
Yeah. My entire bottom line was just lined with
trophies. I have so many trophies, I crashed my television. Then I resurrected Eris because I beat the game 7 times walking backwards.
You lie.
No, I didn't, dude. I saw it, but I forgot to take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably can't do it on yours because I have a special copy of Final Fantasy VII.
I bet. Yeah, you bought it early.
I got it from Japan. Pre-released it. I got the Nintendo version.
No, that's when you tell them it's like, you know, you might have the right version. You just have to keep trying.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a random.
You turned left just once and it counted as a walk forward. You have to reload the game.
Love that I grew up in a time where the internet was pervasive enough to spread these rumors. But not debunk them.
Right.
That was a very special time in human history.
And it was fantastic.
No one else will be a 12-year-old at that time, but people who are my age, and I'm so happy that I was there.
I was in college, which was almost as good.
Yeah.
So, do any of you guys remember the age of video games in which there were competitive high scores where you would take a picture of your TV screen and mail
in
the picture?
Dude, that still goes on.
I remember.
I've seen Fistful of Kong, or Fistful of Quarters, King of Kong.
King of Kong. Yeah, I remember when I had a subscription to Nintendo Power. Mm-hmm. And
everyone has a subscription to Nintendo Power.
I had a Power Glove.
Oh, those were bad.
Yeah, bad as in
so
terrible
bad.
And didn't work.
No, as in Power Glove, he's so bad.
Yeah, Power Glove, he's so bad, but...
They were
also terrible.
Yeah.
Although, you know, Power Glove was actually really cool for Punch-Out.
Dude, it was terrible for Punch-Out.
Dude, you could punch.
Playing Punch? No, you couldn't.
Punch.
What the hell? Forum people explode and tell Chad that you could not punch playing Punch-Out with a Power Glove.
John,
rise, my legion.
Maybe you just weren't doing it right.
No.
Maybe you need to go and get a Power Glove and try it over.
007-373-5963. That is not edited in later. That is the code to fight Mike Tyson and or Mr. Dream, depending on your version. I have both. My party trick is to bet people I can't one-shot Mike Tyson and then collect their money.
I had a Nintendo Power where they had, like, the guys in, you know, the experts, Nintendo Power experts, and the little blurb about them and their feet. And there was one that had a blurb where he said he beat Ninja Gaiden with a power glove.
Not possible.
Even when I was 9, I was like, that is a... lie.
He did that the same day I resurrected Eris and saved the planet with the white materia and holy, and Sephiroth went to reform school and came back and became a Jesuit.
My Sephiroth.
The closest thing I think anybody I know has done that I would almost consider completely impossible had I not known that he did it. Have you guys ever played the Intellivision system?
Oh, yes.
I had an Intellivision.
Okay. All right. Did you ever play Discs of Tron?
No.
Oh my God, I was so young.
That sounds familiar.
It was a really terrible Tron video game.
Let me put it to you this way. I remember the game, but I cannot tell in my mind if I played it or I just know about it. It was so long ago.
It was really horrible, as many of the Intellivision games were, but he rapped the score on it, which should be impossible. I mean, it just should not be able to happen. But he effectively cheated the game. Mm-hmm. But he wrapped the score, took a picture of it, and got a reward of some sort from Intellivision, like a little ribbon or a medal
Cheating. There's only unintended features.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly
what I tell my friends when I beat Wario Stadium in 12 seconds.
There's a certain stage of that game where basically unstoppable opponents come out after you. Yeah. And what he did is artificially prolong the stage right before that, so that could never happen.
Nice.
And just continued racking up score.
I should have done that with Duck Hunt, because I found a way to cheat Duck Hunt where there was like this little 2-pixel by 2-pixel spot. I don't know if it was on all games or my special copy. Which you're never going to see. Or actually, Dan's sisters have my Nintendo and all the games, and I don't think they ever got rid of it. I think it's still over at his parents' house.
Well, you best get it, because I want to see the Duck Hunt special game.
So I had the gray gun, not the stupid-looking orange one. And
I had the orange one. That's canonical.
I could shoot just this 2-pixel by 2-pixel spot on my TV, and it didn't matter where the ducks were, how fast they were moving, it would hit. All I do is just aim at this one spot and pull the trigger. And I got let me put it this way. The ducks at really, really super high level, the human eye can't track them. I mean, they're just so fast. But I was just kept hitting them each time. I don't even know what level I got to. I should have taken a picture of it, but I just got bored and turned it off.
When I played,
I racked it up to an outrageously high level too, but I did that by simply using the second controller to steer the ducks down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My trick was to walk up to the screen of the television, holding the barrel of the zapper to the television, and waste the ducks that way. My parents always made fun of me for that. They were like, Johnny, you're not playing the game. Isn't that even a challenge? I was like, I'm having fun. I'm winning.
You see my score. Yeah. Can you even tell me what
that was? The wall hack of the Reagan administration. That was my God bot, my Game Shark, and it was completely free. Walk up to the TV.
Okay, so control your damn show.
So this episode has been a garden of weeds and nettles growing directionlessly but furiously nowhere.
We've probably put in close to an hour on this.
we're 40 minutes in. So Chad,
yes,
your origin story.
I have said my origin story several times in the mic.
Well, I know we've talked about it.
I know his origin story.
Don't we all?
Yes. I think it was the season's game.
No.
Yes,
no.
I know.
Cold night in the middle of the 70s.
Yeah. So, 1976, a man, a woman, bottle of Schlitz malt liquor.
A little bitty TV with the rabbit ears.
I've seen this video.
AM radio.
Little Johnny Mathis, little as my dad says, a little belly rubbing music.
I've met your dad.
Oh yeah.
So how'd you start gaming, Chad?
So
quickly.
So I started gaming. I made a character for a game first, but then I played a completely separate, unrelated game second. Dan had picked up Star Trek, FASA Star Trek, you know, the only game that Fear the Boot plays at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, D&D was about the devil, so Star Trek was fine.
Well, you know, and that's actually what it was. His parents were deeply, deeply religious.
They picked a game based on a world designed by an avid secular humanist.
Pretty much. Well, you know, it didn't have any of the magic. And in his parents' defense, it was kind of like they didn't know this is what they were told.
Yeah.
And then once Dan and Tex got into it, they were kind of
They realized their terrible mistake.
They were able to educate their parents, and their parents was like, oh, well, of course, this is just a game. How stupid of us. And I sincerely doubt they said it like that. Nice. But anyway, they were playing Fastest Star Trek, and they had decided to play, and I don't think they really even told me about it. I think I showed up at their house, and they're like, here, make this character. And Dan was like, I gotta go cut the grass. So I was with his brother, and I just remember it taking 3 hours to make a character.
Wow.
And I don't remember why, because it takes 20 minutes to make a character in Star Trek. But it took us three hours.
It takes 20 minutes once you understand the concept of a character.
Yeah, once you understand.
What the stupid... What's a D100?
Yeah.
How do I roll one?
What? Yeah, well, you have to look up the definition.
Why did my
then
character die in
one.
Creation, Kevin?
But... we made this character, and then it just so happened that I had some aunts and uncles on my dad's side, and their kid and their friends. Their kid was a teenager. I was probably like 10 or something like that. And they played D&D, very module heavy, dungeon crawling D&D, you know, the kind where you don't pay attention to encumbrance rules, and each character is a walking arsenal with 3,000 pounds of gear on them. And
well, that's how gaming was back
in
those
days. Yeah,
that
sure was.
You remember when Counter-Strike made you only have one primary weapon and one sidearm? It was disgusting. You have 9 guns. There's 9 numbers on the keys. Duh. That's how it was in tabletop, too. But anyway.
And, they invited me out because they knew I was kind of a bookish nerd, and I came out and I played with them. And that was my introduction to actually play. I didn't even make a character. They handed me one because they were all like 10 billionth level. And they were playing the Ravenloft module.
Oh.
And that was my
the
first.
The Mists of Ravenloft.
They were actually halfway through Castle Ravenloft already. I just kind of showed up. There was nobody had names.
Or
right?
Castle Dracula.
Nobody had names. Nobody had backgrounds, characters, personalities, or if they did, I was completely unaware of them. And
the Mists of Ravenloft had wiped them from your mind.
Oh, probably.
That happens.
Dude, that is like way too much story
that is.
For this thing I was doing. That is getting a little too deep. Why don't you put on your fake fangs there? One character.
One. Two. Two PCTPKs. I need to run Count. I need to play Count Von Count runs Castle Ravenloft. I might do this in Fear the God.
Oh my god, awesome. I'd play.
I'm running out of slots because I want to do Fear and Loathing in Gondor too, and I already have two Blood and Goblins
that.
Game, and they're already full.
Mm. But that was my game. That was also the one where I did the deck of many things where you pick it up, how many you choose, and I didn't even know what the role-playing game was, so I'm like, all of them? And I started drawing, and I think it was either my first or
what's the
drawing.
Best class?
It was
algebra.
The funny thing is the answer is wizard. We just didn't know it back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did.
I did too.
Yeah, I was pretty wild, spastic, out of control kid, and I think I only went to like 2 or 3 sessions, and I'm sure they...
You're a pretty wild, spastic, out of control adult.
Well, I try. I don't think they asked me back, and I don't blame them at all. I wouldn't have asked me that. I mean, I was 10, right? And they were all like the youngest one was my cousin, and she was probably 16 to 17 years old, and they were all in their 30s and 40s.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, well, if she was a teenager, they were probably in their 40s,
yeah.
40s to 50s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't blame them at all.
No,
I
not at all.
Totally would have kicked myself out. Had I had a modicum of self-identity, but, you know, it is. I was just wild and all over the place.
It's hard to grasp the social subtleties when you're a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Much less a 10-year-old gamer.
Yeah. Well, and the idea that I was supposed to sit there at the table, transfixed to the goings-on for the whole 6 hours or however
long.
Hell,
I haven't even done that for the 45 minutes of this episode.
Yeah, I know.
You're up in Wars with Friends.
So, John, in first edition, I'm not actually certain, thinking back on it, that wizard was the best class. Well, for one thing, there was no wizard. It was magic user.
Okay.
However,
you are
not
going to get into this.
The best class was elf. Okay.
In first edition.
No, I first edition Bard was a completely different beast than useless ukulele player. So
yeah, it was.
I agree with you.
It wasn't
unless,
the,
of course, you included psionics, in which case anyone with psionics could
I'd never
dominate
psionics.
Every D&D game.
But wait a minute, wasn't first edition Bard the class that the only way that you could actually qualify for it was to cheat?
Well, I don't know if it wasn't mechanically possible, but you definitely had to be like a badass fighter wizard thief.
Yeah,
it knows druid fighter druid thief.
Fighter druid thief made you Bard?
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it was somewhat ridiculous.
Yeah,
in fact, it was a lot ridiculous.
If you don't have 17 charisma and 3d6 straight down the line, you can't be a paladin ridiculous.
It was right up there with
that. Because that's pretty ridiculous. You know, even in second, though, the stat requirements for Bard were probably the second most punishing after paladin. There was a time when being a Bard was a tough thing.
I remember the thing that pissed me off about being a paladin, because I liked playing paladins, was that you had to give up, 90%?
10%.
I thought it was more.
No, the tithe was 10, but it never told you when it was compounded, and it never told you if it was like of your total assets or of your income. So you could read the book and you could be like, wait a minute, I just have to wake up in the morning and give 10% of everything I have. I'm not going to have anything.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there were also hard caps as well. You could only have one magic weapon, one magic suit of armor,
everybody
a mount, and a castle.
And that's something that I never understood, is because you're supposed to be this paladin. I mean, you're not like this fighter, rough and tumble, covered with dirt and mud. I mean, you are a lord. You're a paladin. You're this fighter for truth and justice. But really, you're Don Quixote. You know, you're driving this busted down.
You're an itinerant Ronin with some cleric spells.
And who could heal 2 hit points per level.
Indeed. Lay on hands. Very valuable.
Especially when no one wanted to play the freaking cleric.
To try to steer this burning, crashing train of D&D talk away
to third edition
from D&D completely, did you guys play any
Pathfinder
game when you were a kid that had nothing to do with D&D? Like your first early games? Or was it like, did you guys do straight D&D until you were like in your 20s or 30s or whatever?
You're talking RPGs specifically?
RPGs, yes.
I played straight D&D until a local gaming store opened and I was able to procure other role-playing games. Mm. So once the FLGS opened, I picked up Shadowrun and Vampire and Werewolf and Mage and then wanted to play them all and usually would finally, after 6 months of trying, gather up a group who would play for 10 minutes and then never meet again.
Our GM was one of those that he owned every game that was published. Mm-hmm. Like he had money to burn, and that's what he liked to spend his money on, was role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
So he had them all, but we'd never play them. But every once in a while, we would take a break, like from the D&D campaign, and we would try some of the other games. We would go through the effort of rolling up characters, creating characters, and then we'd start to play. We'd play like for one session, maybe two for Lucky, and then he'd get bored with it and we'd go back. And this, interestingly enough, this is one of the reasons why I balk at doing a bunch of new games and making new characters. You guys that are around me, you know that I have this sort of this issue about creating another brand new goddamn
can't name
character.
Anything.
I don't name anything. It's like, I don't want to come up with a goddamn backstory. And you want to know why? It's because of this. Because I was burned with it when I was younger in the beginning of my playing of, I've got this cool game I want us to play
shiny.
Now. Here's this new game we're going to play. Okay, we sit down for an entire session and we all make characters. We all come up with this. And then next session we play once. And then after that it's done. I'm like, this is bullshit.
Yeah,
I spent literally hours coming up with this character, putting myself into it, doing this, that, and the other, and then boom, it's just, we're done, never to be seen again.
Yeah,
so
I did that a lot.
That's kind
of
my,
too.
That's always in the back of my mind when that happens, so that's the problem I have with it.
We have reverse new shiny with our Sunday game. We have new games we're getting into, but all we want is for Dan to come back and play more Battletech.
That's true.
But Dan's butt exploded this weekend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Pat, to hipster this discussion up a little bit, what's the most obscure RPG you've ever played?
Monostat.
Not counting homebrews. I'll just toss that one out.
Oh, it's homebrewed, all right.
I know.
With lots of yeast.
That furry game. The sci-fi.
Justicars?
Justifiers.
Justifiers.
Yeah.
That's not obscure at all because I've heard about it on a podcast.
That's right. Yeah.
This thing was a pamphlet that we found under another RPG in a book. Like, I don't even think that the guy who ran the store knew he had it. It was probably like the previous owner, and then that previous owner ordered it in a lot that he got at an estate sale and shoved it on a shelf and stuck a price tag on it. And then we're just shuffling through. It's like, whew, blow the dust off of it. What is this? And this was before we knew about like what a furry was or that there was any negative connotation to it. Mm. We're like, a sci-fi game where you could play an animal? That's awesome! We love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles! Mm. This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in space!
Awesome.
And
sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, yeah. And so we got it. It was, in fact, awesome. But looking back at them, like looking, Dan dug up the old copies and looking through it, it's like, oh my god, it's furries in space.
Yeah, yep. Totally. Actually, to answer your question to me, Johan, we were pretty vanilla, so actually nothing terribly obscure off the wall. Like we played Call of Cthulhu, Deadlands. There were a couple in there, like I said, where we tried. I don't remember the game. And I don't remember the name of it or the game because, again, it was like one session, and that was it. Yeah. So I don't remember what it was, but nothing really oddball or indie or really, really obscure. It's just that, like I said, he owned everything. Like a game would come out and he'd get it. And he's got bookshelves. Like Dan's got the one bookshelf in here. PW has like at least five of those completely full of books.
Yeah.
Spine to spine all the way across.
It's just, we don't count as BattleTech.
It's unbelievable.
BattleTech was the first non-D&D game I played.
Really?
Yeah. I had been gaming through the late 90s and early 00s, all second edition D&D, and then when 3.0 came out, all 3.0, until I linked up with you. And
were you there when we picked up 3.0? Because I remember I had just pulled together a group of these new people, and we're like, okay, let's play a role-playing game. I was able to sell them on, because we had a lot of people who'd never played role-playing games before. I really sold them on, and it's like, okay, well, let's go down to the local hobby shop, and we'll pick out a game. We didn't have anything in mind, to my knowledge. We didn't have anything in mind, and we walked in, and it's just like, let's pick out something that everybody thinks is cool. We'll learn that system. We'll do it. And we walked in, and that was like the week 3.0 had come out. And so they had this big-ass display right when you walk in the door, these really cool shiny books, and everyone's like, ooh, what's that? And
they were shiny.
Very shiny. It's tough to remember how crazy high production value 3.0's PHB was at the
very
time.
Very slick but, at the time. Very slick.
But I don't think it was that D&D game. I think that game petered out by the time you guys invited me to your group. We did start a succession of BattleTech games through like 02, 03, and 04 that were my first non-D&D game. Take on the Silver Scorpions game was the first like over a year long campaign I'd ever played in.
When we did a full beginning, middle, end campaign.
Yeah,
so
that game
had
was
an epilogue and
1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap this one up. Again, as a final reminder, go out there and look at Con Planner, Fear the Con 5. Get out there, put your games up.
Yep.
The players, get out there and sign up for games. And we'll catch you next time.
See ya.